Thank you, Louise. Jeff, a quick roll call.
Yes, please.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Jeff Newman, James Bledel, David Maher, Rolf Knorben, Paul Diaz. On Adobe Connect, we have Gabrielle Pinheiro as well as Tatiana Kramtsova. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Thank you.
We miss anybody? Okay. Welcome, everyone. It is August 27th, 2009. This is the PDP work team call, and we've had about a three-week break, so I'm hoping everyone has had a wonderful summer and is now ready to jump into the autumn season and getting close to the SOL meeting in just a couple months. So with that said, I think the agenda for today is to just do a brief status of where we are on stage one, the stage one report, and then to actually before we start stage one report, I want Margie will go over what happened last night at the ICANN board meeting with respect to the bylaws, and then we'll go through stage status report on the stage one report. And then we'll dive into the remaining questions on stage two and talk about the schedule going forward. Does anybody have any questions on that?
Excuse me, Brian Winterfeld's joining in.
Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to start off with Margie going over the what happened last night at the ICANN board meeting with the bylaws.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. Last night, the... late last night, there was a board meeting, and the bylaws amendment package that was proposed by staff was approved. The areas that affect this working group are that we did include a notation, and you'll see it in the final bylaws when they're posted, basically an introduction to Annex A that highlighted that the provisions in Annex A are only temporary until the work of the PDP group is complete and a new PDP procedures are proposed. And that was at the request of the Structural Improvement Committee because they wanted to make sure that it was clear that we weren't assuming that these procedures would be the final procedures that were currently listed in Annex A. And they wanted to acknowledge that this was an ongoing work process and that the amendments that were made in Annex A were just temporary ones until the final work product of this group could be produced. So that's where we are. You'll see the bylaws as they're posted by legal counsel, but they were approved, and that'll help facilitate the implementation of all the GNSO procedures and voting, for elect counselors. Any questions?
Yes, Marty, it's Rolf Knorben speaking. I would be interested just to hear how the board handled the comments which were posted on the public comments site, especially the comments regarding the new constituency, which I understood should only be part of the of the non-contractual house in the future. And there have been many comments about that issue, and I would like, what was there any discussion about that?
Oh, yes, definitely. The approach that staff took with the public comments, because there were so many comments received, and some of them were fairly substantial, was that we elected to defer some of those issues until later. Particularly with the issue on new constituencies, it's actually included in the board resolution that staff is instructed to evaluate whether there should be limitations on new constituencies going forward because they recognized the concern that was raised during the public comment period. So they didn't amend the bylaws in the version that got did last night, but the direction to staff is to develop appropriate language to address that concern.
Okay.
Did you want to also talk about, there was one provision that we discussed in the last call that seemed to generate a little bit of discussion, which was the that was currently approved, which is the definition of a GNSO supermajority.
Sure. With respect to the comments that were more clarifications, that was a clarification that was just an error in the initial draft. So we made the suggestion that, Jeff, you recommended. We changed the language from GNSO supermajority to just supermajority.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that one. I meant the one that we discussed about how the GNSO supermajority is defined for purposes of consensus policies?
The version of the bylaws that was adopted didn't change. So the voting threshold, the way it was posted on in August 3rd, is what's in the final version.
Okay. So, James, did you have a question?
No question. I just I wanted to make sure I was thinking about the same thing that you were raising, Jeff.
Okay. Okay. Is there any other questions on the update on the bylaws? Okay. And then
I'm sorry, Jeff. This is James. Is there a date of effect of those changes, or how does that work once they're approved by the board?
The approval is effective yesterday, but I believe in the transition article there's a reference to that they're not implemented until the effective date that's announced by the board. So obviously the restructure isn't effective yesterday. It'll be sometime in October, right around the beginning of the sole meeting. I don't have the specific date, but there's a placeholder for the board to announce basically when the restructure date is to be effective.
Okay, and so until that time is formalized, we're operating under the existing bylaws pretty much indefinitely until that announcement is made.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. With respect to the Stage 1 report, which we spent a lot of time on, the hope is, and I've been a little bit of the reason for the delay, so I'll take it upon myself, the hope is to get that out by the end of this week, so by the end of tomorrow, to get that Stage 1 initial first draft report out so that the team can review it and discuss it on our next call. So Marika, do you want to say anything else about that, or it pretty much covers it?
No, I think that covers it. Hope to get it out in the next few days, and then I would just like to encourage everyone to really carefully review that report and share any comments or edits on the mailing list. I mean, you're free to use track changes in the document to highlight any comments you have, or just post them on the mailing list if you think that's easier. Or I don't know if some people prefer to have the text as well on the wiki, but as it's quite a lengthy document, it might make it more difficult to review and discuss it.
Okay. Any comments or questions on that? Okay, jumping into Stage 2, which is the document that's currently on the Adobe Connect. We have a few items to discuss left in Stage 2. The goal is to get a survey out within a couple weeks, just like we did for Stage 1, to get everyone to respond to the survey, which really is based on what we've been discussing the last few weeks, what's in this document. And then to take this document plus the survey results and come up with a Stage 2 report sometime early in October, so that we can certainly have it, both Stage 1 and Stage 2, to discuss in Seoul. And concurrently, we'll also be working through Stage 3 on the next couple of calls. So for just a reminder of what the different stages are, the Stage 1 is the everything up to leading to the delivery of an issues report to the council. The Stage 2 is really the everything from the delivery of the issues report to the council through the council consideration of whether to launch a formal PDP, which also includes things like the approval of a charter and basically everything up to the delivery of the charter to the working groups. And then stage three, which is actually stage three is what do we do once we get the working group report, once that's delivered to the council and everything around that. And then stages, the rest of the stages are pretty much what happens after the working group is done, and not only when council approves it or if they approve it and it gets delivered to the board, but also what happens after everything goes through the board and, you know, basically monitoring the policy development process and monitoring each specific issue. So that's kind of the road ahead that we will need to deal with. Any questions on that general timeline and stages?
Okay.
So let's jump into this document. Where we left off was, and actually if you scroll up, I'm intentionally leaving out number 5 for now, because 5 is talked about emergency procedures and what should be done in the case of if there's urgency. I'm going to leave that to the end because it really would help to actually have talked about what to do in the normal case first and then figure out what could be done if there's some urgent situation. So I see James has his hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. And I apologize if I'm being superfluous here or overthinking this, but there are several PDPs that are currently underway, and it sounds like the changes of this and with the bylaws changes are probably going to be adopted, whatever comes out of this group and the working group work team are going to be adopted prior to the completion of those PDPs. And I'm just thinking, do we need to formally think about how to grandfather in existing PDPs under the old process, or I don't know. I don't want to take the group off track, but I was just, this just popped into my head that we're kind of fixing a plane when it's already in flight. So I just wanted to put that out on the table.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. What I was thinking is, I don't know how long this is going to take us. I'm not sure there is. There's a few PDPs that are underway and some that are still in the pre-PDP stage, even though they have working groups like the registration abuses. Really not even it's not even a PDP, it's just a kind of development of the issues. But I think, I think that's an issue for the council to discuss once we propose our recommendations, and maybe at the end, if there are still that are going on, we could maybe think about how to transition those to the new to the new PDP draft that we come up with. The voting thresholds will be in place, but everything else won't be at that point.
Okay, thanks. And I don't want to take us off track, so I just wanted to get that into the record, I guess.
Okay. Margie, you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. I think maybe we might consider having a transition section. You know how we're dealing with the PDP process in chunks. Maybe at the end we should think about that, because I don't know that we've given any thought, and that's certainly a good question that James raises about, what do you do with existing PDP? So that might be something this group explores.
Okay. Do you guys want to add that to whatever our last stage was? Talk about?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay, so if we jump ahead to number 7, which is, I think, there we go. So this is basically and this topic has actually come up a lot, so I sent a note around to a bunch of the chairs of the constituencies in the council, because we've been having a difficult time getting, a number of people to participate, and most of the discussion, rather than focusing on this group, focused really on, ICANN's asking us to do too much, and the ICANN, everyone's overwhelmed. So this next question basically says, okay, once the once the council decides to initiate a formal PDP, then should there be some sort of evaluation of staff costs and resources needed to conduct the PDP and prioritize existing policy work and revisit their existing deadlines and deliverables? Right now, there is no such process. There's nothing at the council level. Once they get the issues report, their basic next job is to immediately vote on whether to initiate a formal PDP, but there's really no consideration or no formal process for considering whether they should hold off or how long they may hold off, you know, if that's even permissible, or whether they just have to vote at that point on initiating a PDP or to drop it. Is there any thoughts on that or anything that you think we could or should formalize? I see Wolf has his hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Jeff. Well, I have a question to really understand this point. What should be the reason, well, to bring up this question? You know, what should be the goal or the consequence of doing such a study, let me say, a cost study? And why should it be then, if in case, should it be limited to only to staff? Because if you look to the PDP evaluation and these things, so the council itself is also heavily involved in that, so there are costs on the council side as well. So I would like to understand really what could be, because a cost, let me say, estimation or cost investigation could also be a big thing, let me say. For example, if you need external knowledge for that, for example. So it's not very clear to me.
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. Let me ask the ICANN staff that's on this call. I've seen some work come out of the GNSO operations work team. They've talked about an administrative body of the, I don't know if this will ever get wings, but some sort of administrative body of the GNSO to talk about prioritizing PDPs. I think this element really deals with, things like, maybe it's something like what's going on with the Who Is studies, where, the community had wanted certain studies or does want certain studies to be done, and, whether there should be part of the process of ICANN staff to come back and say, hey, look, if you want these studies done by these experts, just realize it's going to cost this amount of money, and I'm not sure we have the budget for it, or we don't have that planned in our budget, something like that. Is that, Marika and Margie, something you guys thought this meant?
This is Marika. I think partly means as well, and then looking more at the, revisiting existing deadlines and deliverables, this partly would tie in as well if indeed the council would suddenly decide, well, this is priority number one and all resources need to be dedicated to this particular task. It might mean, of course, as well that certain policy development processes might slow down, and they have, of course, specific timelines that are currently prescribed by the bylaws, and we need to see if they stay the same or they're getting more margin. But anyway, I guess it's the expectation that at least in charter, certain deadlines will be written in that are expected to be adhered to. So how do you deal with that?
Okay, and does that overlap with what the GNSO operations work team is working on?
To be honest, I don't know. I would need to check with the colleagues that are working on that, what they are exactly discussing. I mean, part of my personal thinking behind this was as well, like, should there be any kind of, like, how many PDPs can go on at the same time? Should there be any kind of thresholds whereby you say, okay, this one stays in the dock until, one is completed, because we just cannot take on so many at the same time? Should there be, some kind of system? And, of course, it can be overruled maybe in case of priority, but should there be some kind of baseline where you say, well, if we have already five policy development process working groups ongoing on top of, six other working groups, any new issues that is being raised now, we can go through the stage of the issues report, but as soon as it comes up to a council decision, it basically needs to wait until, one of the working group completes, and who makes that assessment, or how do you go about that? I guess that's maybe part as well in this, part of this question. At least that's what I read into it.
So I think the last few issues you're talking about, I think are, that I know the GNSO Operations Committee is looking into. So we need to, what I thought this one really meant was on, work that needs to be done within the actual, once the PDP is launched, the GNSO Council votes to initiate the PDP, and that implies that they've already set the right priorities, then the costs that are involved to actually do the work, both on ICANN staff side, but also externally, for resources that may be needed, like expert opinion and others, which relates to question number eight, which, you know, leads into question number eight, which is what options should the GNSF Council have at its disposal to ensure that it can make an informed decision, which means that, you know, maybe an expert needs to be retained or other interested parties.
Okay. Well, speaking.
Yep.
So, but I wonder whether, you know, if the number seven is really clear enough. I understand, you know, right now. So I have, so for my thinking, I also would be happy if in advance we would have an overview or a kind of table, you know, what does it mean, what kind of resources we need, what kind of costs we will be faced, and all these things in the future with regards to conducting a PDP. But to turn out such a study and to come back with such a table is not that easy. So I wonder whether this already reasons well for discussions and rejections and objections, you know, which are not based with very, very good arguments. In case if we could find out a way, you know, in advance well to find out a rough overview regarding the resources we need. Compared to other PDP which are in the pipeline, and that would be nice. So if, for example, we find out, okay, this kind of PDP, the council is guessing, okay, we need external input for that, for example, which may cause costs and time and so on. So that's one item. But to find out how much that would be cost, what could cost, I think it goes too far, and it's. I wonder whether this is something which is to be done within the business, you know, when the business plan of ICANN is made, and because they are experts. And they have in mind, okay, what could be the future? What kind of PDP could come up for the next year, coming from the different discussions? And they may have some input for that. But I would like to avoid a situation that the council is faced with, okay, just to turn out a study for cost estimation for these things.
Okay. Does anyone else have any thoughts? So Wolf, just to summarize, you're talking about to do an in-depth study would probably be overkill, would be too much, but to do some sort of rough estimate of costs that would be incurred in this PDP and maybe a comparison to other PDPs would be helpful, but you're afraid that something that's too in-depth would provide a basis for objection where otherwise there may not be such a basis?
Yes.
Okay, James.
Hi. I think just wanted to lend support to Wolf's statements that perhaps we don't need to. We could even create a template of estimating or projecting out those costs and what the burden will be, and then comparing it to what's already in process. But that raises just two quick questions, and I'm thinking of this from a process management perspective. One is that then there needs to be some sort of mechanism by which to handle the situation where a brand new PDP comes out of council that is inserted into the PDP docket, maybe at a higher priority than PDPs that are already underway. And we talked a little bit about an urgent, and that's, you know, having an urgent PDP process. It's kind of a binary, right? So you have, it's either urgent or it's not. But once we start qualitatively comparing, you know, costs, then and queuing them up accordingly, then it's possible that some could be priority could be shuffled on a continuous basis. And then the other thing that I wanted to put out there was the idea that PDPs are not necessarily commoditized work units. They will affect different SOs and ACs differently. Some may be registrar intensive, some may be registry intensive, some may be IPC intensive, for example. And I'm wondering if there's any merit to exploring the idea of doing a bit of load balancing on PDP based upon where staff projects or the council projects that it will have the most impact. But that could, again, unnecessarily complicate the whole situation. So, but I did want to mention that we should be careful not to treat these as interchangeable units.
Yeah, I think those are all good points, and I think, again, we're in a weird position here because I know the GNSO Operations Committee may be looking at some of these issues. So, Marika, is Ken Bauer the staff person for that?
No, I think it's Rob Hogarth together with Judy Headland. So I can check in with them on this issue and see what they're doing. So maybe we can maybe defer to the next meeting before discussing this further to make sure that we know what they're thinking in that area.
Yes,
well, may I just intervene? It's worth speaking to, since I am a member of that team as well.
Okay, good, great, yeah.
Actually, we didn't reach that status that we are talking about anything of with regard to the PDP. Since we are looking to this team, what the PDP team is doing, because we have something to do with regard to seating of the council. That's the first priority. But maybe later on, I will pick up that question as well to the team. Because we have something to do with regard to the PDP, and I can pick up that question and to discuss whether we should take over that question there. But at the time being, there's nothing.
Okay, so the issue is prioritizing of PDPs, how that's done, what goes into that analysis, and so, Wolf, you're saying that the operations team has not done any work on that yet.
Yes.
So if that's the case, then it should be for us to consider at this point since they're not doing that yet.
Yes. So I would say, you know, from the if I look to the composition of the council operations team, which is even smaller than this team here, right now, so I would say, okay, let's do it here in that team, in the PDP working team, and give them some ideas, they could put it then into something rules of procedure. Yeah?
Okay, James, did you have your hand up, or is that an old one?
Sorry, Jeff, I stepped away from my keyboard there for a moment. I will lower it as soon as I get back. Please disregard.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then let's take on some of the questions. So one of the questions that came up from this discussion was, is there a maximum number of PDPs that could happen at once? Anyone have a thought on that one?
What was the question? Is there a maximum number of PDPs?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, and I'm expecting the answer is probably we can't really define a number, but is there something that, I'm just trying to think of questions to ask to get us to discuss how the GNSO Council could go about saying at some point, look, we have too many PDPs going on, we're not going to have the resources to do another one.
Yeah, but isn't that a question of how the council is going to organize themselves in putting priorities, let me say, on this question.
Is there any, and I agree with that, is there any guidance we can give to how the council should prioritize?
Because of course, as Marika, because of course there would be, you know, there's of course opportunity for gaming the system. If you just keep on raising issues and, you know, let the machine going, there's hardly any time to do any actual work. So, I mean, I don't know either what the magic number would be, but it does seem to make sense to say, you know, with the current, you know, bandwidth and role of volunteers, you know, the group sees that the maximum is between X and Y, and any more, you know, should be given serious consideration, especially looking at volunteer capacity, because I don't think it's as much a question of staff being able to support, but, you know, we've seen over the past that it's become difficult for volunteers to commit their time to so many different initiatives, and, you know, we've gone with many groups from weekly calls to bi-weekly calls, which, of course, makes the overall process much longer, so you would need to ask the question as well, like, if you would limit it, you might get things quicker done, so the overall time frame gets shorter for everything, while if you take on a lot at the same time, everything takes much, much longer, so, you know, you might be taking on a lot of issues, but you don't necessarily resolve them quicker.
Yeah, Jeff, this is I see Paul has his hand up, sorry.
Okay, Paul.
Thanks, guys. Yes, Paul, you know, Marika, I totally respect what you're saying, but at the same time, I wouldn't be so humble as you always are in terms of staff resources. And Jeff, I would offer that if this group is going to try and present any sort of guidance for council in the decision-making about PDPs, that it's really critical. One of the few things that they can look at in terms of a hard number is the availability of staff. And, you know, staff could determine amongst itself realistically what is their maximum threshold for support of PDPs. The challenge you'll have with volunteers is that it's always a moving target and it's only going to be Sony's best guess. But as a one factor in the decision-making, not the only factor for sure, but a very important one nonetheless, staff support, you know how many staff are available. You can multiply out how many PDPs could they realistically support to the levels, to the standards that they always have that we've all come to expect, which is a very high standard. And there you go. There's one factor, and it's a real one that you can generate, because as far as, you know, volunteers go, heck, we've had, just as a sidebar, the new transfer PDP, you know, wonderfully surprised to see how many people have stepped up in the first meeting, but we'll also see after the first, second, even third meeting, do you still continue to have that high level of participation or not? It's hard to say with you know, volunteers and everybody's busy schedules. At least with the staff, you've got, you know, the professionals. They will be there, and you can, you know, just build off of whatever the number is of available staff. You know, they can support X number of PDPs. There you go. That's the maximum threshold.
Okay. I think those are good comments. Is anything else that the council can use?
Jeff, this is James. I just wanted to echo a lot of what Paul said, and then just maybe put out there that you know, staff knows or can readily find out who's you know, how many PDPs are in process and who's participating on them. And I think that you know, back in college, they used to say for 1 hour class time, you had X number of hours outside of class work, and I think that, you know, the same goes for a PDP as well. For every hour on the call, there's X number of hours on the list or off the call. And I think it just becomes really a matter of arithmetic to figure out that, you know, you have a finite number of volunteers and what their threshold for depletion is, and I think that, you know, at some point, and it gets into fuzzy logic here, but at some point you're expecting that a brand new PDP will be populated by people you've never seen before, which doesn't really happen in the real world. So, but I think that, you know, from Paul's perspective, that, you know, there's some metrics we can put against staff resources, but I think that there's also some metrics or capacity metrics that can be inferred from the volunteer folks as well.
Staff, do you have a comment on that? Is there anything you guys have done or could do to kind of help us to have those kind of metrics?
it's a bit of a challenge. I mean, this is Marika again, because of course, you know, if the community demands more at some point, you know, we just put more resources in the pot, and that, of course, might take a bit of time because we might need to recruit people. But in the end, you know, this is a volunteer-driven organization, so if more resources are required, you know, we do our best to add those necessary. So I'm not sure whether staff would be in a position to say to the council, oh, well, you know, well, we could, of course, say we've reached our thresholds and we're not doing anything more, but the more likely scenario is that we say, well, you know, we'll try to find the resources if, you know, if you want to push ahead, we'll do our best to keep up. But as I said, I think for us, it has become more a question, can, you know, volunteers keep up? And as Paul said, I think we've made quite an effort in reaching out and trying to get new volunteers on board, and it's very encouraging to see new names and new faces in these groups. But the question is, will they stay there? And indeed, it will be interesting to see if the 3-4 meetings we're back to the same group that are already involved in all the other different groups, and where we'll struggle again of getting work done, because that's, I think, one of the realities that we're currently faced with. We have many working groups going on, and I think many groups start off saying, oh, we're going to do a lot of work and, you know, we don't need staff to provide a lot of help apart from support. But in many of the groups, at the end of the day, you know, staff is tasked with writing documents and providing first drafts just because there's no capacity for the community to take those roles on.
Okay. Margie and then Paul.
I think Marika covered it. I agree with what Marika said about the ability of the community to participate, because even if we can, on the staff side, can tell you that we can support a certain number of PDPs and we're prepared to do so, we really need the brain power of the community and the input of the volunteers, or it's really, you know, no good, because the document needs to reflect, you know, the consensus of the community, and you really don't want it to be a staff-driven document because we don't have enough participation from the community.
Okay. Paul?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. You know, again, I appreciate Marika and Margie's, you know, being humble about it, but I think that this working group has an opportunity. We really should seize the opportunity to sort of reset expectations about PDP processes. You know, we've all noted, for example, that the timelines are just never, ever observed. What's in the bylaws is just completely divorced from reality. And I think in the same way, we should take advantage, and again, it's just one factor of hopefully several in decision-making, but you know, having a metric that, you know, staff can kind of determine amongst themselves what is a realistic threshold and offer that as a threshold, not to keep saying, oh, okay, boss, we'll do more with less, or we'll look to, you know, perhaps hire another person. No, have something out there so that there is some sense of a ceiling. Otherwise, we have, you know, we'll continue to have the possibility, very strong possibility, in fact, that, you know, a single council member who is an advocate for a certain position can finagle the system, ram something through, and we wind up having the situation we have today, where we're understaffed, both in terms of professional ICANN people as well as volunteers, working on issues that, you know, squeak through, meet the minimum thresholds, but then don't get you know, a lot of brain power support, use a term we had earlier. And we might be able to avoid some of that by, you know, sort of having a sense of, look, there's a ceiling. And until we work through the issues that have already been agreed to, stop adding more stuff to the mix.
Or have some process to reprioritize if it's really that urgent.
Exactly. And urgency, right. And just make sure that there's a well-understood process by which you say, look, this really is important to a lot of people. Bump it to the front of the line.
Okay. I see Wolf.
Yes. I would fully support all of what was said in this regard. And I think, well, at the end, really, my principle is, well, to have I prefer to have less with a higher quality, higher level of quality, and instead of having more with lower quality at the end. And that means really we have to, the council has to take into consideration the staff resources as one part of his discussions and deliberations. This is one part. I fully understand that this could not be the only argument. Well, to check the staff resources against the question should we come up with a new PDP or not? So that it could not be the major question. It's one really important question, because at the end, what we need is we need documents to be written, yeah, and we need persons well who write these documents, and these are staff people. I understand that fully, but on the other hand, we have there are implications from the community. They would like to have. They are raising their hands because they have some needs with regards maybe to initiate a PDP, and that's for me only it's an item for discussion for the council, and prioritize that by taking into account staff resources as well, the urgency of the issues, and it's then a question of also the quality of the council, of the people, of the members of the council, how they take that into consideration. So that's it. Coming to a conclusion for that, I think it's very hard to set a number here or a limit, rather than to write down, let me say, all these arguments.
Okay. See, James.
Sorry, mute button problems there. Yes, and I just want to commend Wolf. That was an excellent point relative to the deterioration in quality versus quantity. And I just wanted to put out in a conclusion, I could just sum up my concerns with this topic, is that the answer to capacity challenge cannot be ICANN grows. Okay? I think that's something that we're all of us are maybe very mindful of as we start to bring on more TLDs and get into more and more issues, and there's questions of mission creep or where the scope begins and ends. And I think that, you know, we certainly cannot use this idea of just indefinite and unquestioned growth of the staff and scope and reach of ICANN in response to these types of issues. I don't think that is something that is, coming from my background, and I certainly don't mean this as a slight on the staff at all. I mean, you know, I think Marika and Margie and everyone will tell you that I am very appreciative of their help, but we cannot just respond to adding headcount to address these types of issues. We need to step back and take a look at what, where they're coming from, where they're being raised, and what the prioritization is. So I just wanted to put that out on the table and say that that's a strong, that's an important concern, is that we just can't keep ramping up.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is Paul, and I want to 100% concur with what James just said for the record.
Anyone disagree with that? Okay, I'm not seeing any disagreement. Here's another question. It actually brings us to, if you want to scroll up to, or not a question, but some, we actually did talk a little bit about this. If you scroll up to number one, the last part of it, right before number two. So if you go right before, it says, some suggested it might be helpful to foresee some flexibility for prioritization and scheduling reasons. For example, to put the initiation of a PDP on hold if there are already too many going on. So we did talk about this earlier. Right now, the bylaws are pretty strict as to, you know, once you initiate the PDP, then it's X number of days before a working group needs to be constituted or a task force, actually, in the existing bylaws. There really isn't an option but we can formalize it that there could be an option to actually vote to initiate the PDP, but put it on hold until there's until the council decides there's sufficient resources or time to do that. Is that something you guys would support putting formally into the bylaws, is giving them the option to not immediately constitute a working group, but to put it on hold to say, yes, this is important enough that we need to initiate a PDP, we just need to have the resources to move forward? And again, that could be a mechanism of gaming too, right? So someone who doesn't want the PDP to go forward, if they get outvoted, is there a way for them to game it so that they can prevent a working group from being constituted because they don't agree with the whole PDP in the first place? What can we do to balance that? So, for example, an option could be that, you know, once a PDP is voted to be initiated by the council, it could, a working group needs to be constituted within 6 months or something to that effect.
It was speaking, yeah?
Yep, please.
In this respect, I have also something to understand, because in several parts of the document, it's related to voting. Voting through the PDP process, that means, so once the council has decided to initiate a PDP with the given threshold, you know, the quorum and the threshold and all these things, then there are some questions after the working team has been established or the charter has to be established as well, and then the working team has to be established, or vice versa. Then the question is every time, you know, what kind of levels of voting we have at that time, we should have at that time. So that may be comparable to that, because I would say the threshold which the council took by voting about the PDP initiation, that must be the master, I would say, the highest level. So not any question should be voted beyond, you know, that. It means if you are talking about, you know, chartering and all these things, the follow-up things, there should not be, for voting, from my point of view, there should not be a voting level which is that high that the council already has taken. So that's my understanding, because the council decision to initiate a PDP is, for me, the highest priority. And afterward, it should run as as fast as possible. So that's.
But the counter to that, right, is to play, you know, to play the other side, is that if you have a lower threshold to delay the process, or would you say...
Not the delay. You know, delaying is something negative. I would say all questions which are regarding, you know, the positive development of a PDP, these questions shouldn't be voted upon a higher level. You know, that means vice versa. A negative voting against that should not be lower. That would be my conclusion. And a potential negative voting against, which could imply, kill, let me say, this process, the PDP already initiated, that should be of a higher level.
Okay. James?
Yes, and once again, I apologize. I need a faster mute button. Just a question relative to the time frames that are part of the milestone charter, where it will say, for example, T plus X, T plus Y. Are these codified anywhere in the PDP process or in the bylaws, or are those set on the table when council deliberates the PDP?
So currently there are timing thresholds in there in the bylaws that says that once there's an issues report, then the council's only has 15 days to actually vote on it, whether to initiate the formal PDP or not. That's what's currently in the bylaws.
Okay, and I was thinking that, you know, perhaps rather than trying to project and foresee all the unanticipated scenarios where this could be needed or could be gamed, that and I don't want this to sound like a punt over to the council, but perhaps if we injected some additional flexibility into that process and trusted that they would be mindful of the scheduling and the different time frames and the complexity of the PDP issue at hand, and just have the discretion to set those milestones. It might go a long way towards balancing the workload and ensuring and maintaining the quality of the work. So I just wanted to put that out there as instead of modifying the existing bylaws and then making them more and more complex, that perhaps we just inject some human judgment into this, and then give the council the discretion to set those time frames as they feel they're appropriate.
So you're saying that the bylaws should not have any, that maybe the rules of operation might have some suggested timelines, but not the bylaws, and that the council should have some flexibility or flexibility basically to do what it wants, either to delay a vote on it or to vote on it in favor of initiating a PDP, but then delay, or not delaying, that's a negative word, but putting the PDP in a queue, if you will, that once another one is completed, then there's enough time to actually start that one up.
Right, giving them the flexibility and the discretion to judge on the individual issues that we can't foresee right now, in this exercise, and then maybe there can be some maximums in there, Jeff, so that the folks are comfortable that they're not going to be permanently put on the back burner. But within those maximums, they can the council can exercise its discretion.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on that kind of maximum?
No. Sorry, I grant you that this idea is not fully based, but what is it now? I think we could probably do some addition here and figure out where if they have to vote on it in 15 days, and then the working group has to convene its first meeting in 15, some time frame beyond that. I mean, we could probably set the maximum out at something like 90 or 100 days. I think what the initiators of the PDP want to see is that that their particular PDP will not always be on deck and never actually in the game, but I think that beyond that, the council should be able to make that decision on a situational basis and say that we feel that. Rather than waiting 15 days, we think that this particular issue can wait 40 days.
Now, remember, there's a couple different phases we're talking about here, right? There's the vote to formally initiate the PDP, which is separate than to formally approve a charter, which is also separate from actually getting the working group set up. So at which stage, or is it any of these stages, that you think the council should have discretion to put in a queue for a certain period of time?
Jeff, I'd like to say that the entire process, or anywhere in the process that where specific timelines are identified, like to submit for consideration of this group, that we remove specific timelines, let the council exercise some judgment on those. If we don't feel that that's going to be acceptable to other areas of the community, then we open up the possibility of maximums of 100 days, but I'm thinking from the time that the issues report is delivered from the, to the council until the time that the PDP working group has its first meeting, I think that should be allowed to float.
Anyone support that? Well, Paul, you have a comment?
Yeah, I wanted to weigh in. You know, I think what James is raising and what we just said, a part of it is very appealing to me. Another part is maybe at a minimum when we, you know, we start providing drafts of the positions, that we really call this one out to try and solicit community input on this idea. Because, I mean, the one thing we've all recognized is that the timelines that we currently work under are always ignored. And there's no real penalty for that. So, you know, the counter-argument would be like what James just said, just take them out. Leave it to discretion. The counter to that, of course, is that, you know, things could languish forever if there's no sense somewhere that there's a time frame to provide. So I don't know if I necessarily want to say let's drop them all right now, but at the very least, let's try to be very clear as we develop reporting for the work that we're doing. That, you know, we're looking for input on this particular issue, whether or not we should even bother having timelines since it never followed.
So in setting up a maximum, so let's say, let's just make up a number, let's say it's 6 months between the delivery of an issues report to when a working group, the first meeting of a working group, let's say that's our maximum. Who makes that decision? We say council, and I know Wolf was talking about before, was saying that he doesn't want to see more voting or a higher threshold, but who makes the decision and for how long that process is queued up? How is that done? And is that a potential for gaming by parties that just wanted to see it delayed longer and longer?
Well, Jeff, I think that, and I'm sorry to jump ahead of Wolf, but I felt like that question was directed at me.
Yep.
I felt that not only is that not contributing to the possibility of gaming, but it's actually a good check against that possibility, because the council is going to have the queue on the one hand, so they're going to know what's in the docket, and then they're going to have the issue on the other hand. They're going to know exactly how complex and staff and volunteer intensive that's going to be, and they're going to be able to discuss the timeline as a part of the approval process. And I think that if anyone were to try to gain that, you know, the counselors individually or as a group would, you know, would be very cognizant of that and would be able to put a stop to that almost as it's occurring. So that's just, you know, I'm thinking the more we insert finite and specific timelines into this process, the less discretion or flexibility that we're providing to the council. And it's just always going to be that balance between flexibility and predictability. So I agree with Paul. I think that if we could highlight this area and get some comments from the community, you know, I'd love to, for example, figure out what my boss thinks of this. You know, I just came up with this last night. But anyway, you know, I think it's worth discussing as a component of our comment period, and if we can call attention to that, let's do that, because it's, you know, every date, every time frame, every deadline that we put in there is putting the council into a smaller and smaller box and tying their hands a little bit tighter. And as Paul said, there's right now the response to that is we'll just disregard the timeline. There's no penalty for doing so. It doesn't affect anything else. They're just kind of, they're fiction at this point. So so I think we should definitely get some broader feedback from the community on that.
Okay, I want to go to Wolf and then Margie and then try to go on to another question.
Sorry, I only would like to say I have to leave. I have a hard cut because of another conference we have with the constituency right now. But what I wanted to say is, well, please, with regards to timelines and thresholds and all these things, please do not wait and do not expect anything from the other team in that respect, because they are expecting something from this team here with regards to all inputs regarding the PDP issues, timelines, and all these things. So we should discuss it in this team here and then give them to the other, because they would put it into the rules of procedure then for the council. Okay, I have to leave. Sorry for that. Next time, what will be the next time? Is that fixed right now?
Oh, okay. So the next time is 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks, okay.
Okay.
Sorry for that.
That's okay. All right, let's go to Margie.
Sure. Just to follow up on the question of who might be involved in the scheduling of the priorities, you might think about allocating that right to the vice chairs and the chair of the GNSO. This came up in the Toronto meeting last week, and the question was, well, what's the role of the vice chairs of the council? And so far, I'm not aware of very many responsibilities, but this might be one that might be appropriate because you would have a vice chair from each house. So certainly each house would be represented in that decision to prioritize PDPs.
Okay. Is there any other comments on the priority? I think we've got some good stuff, and I think Paul's suggestion of calling this one out, I think, is a good one that we'll certainly do in our draft. If we can jump down to number number eight. Is there... are there any options to the GNSO Council to basically have experts to when they're deciding whether to initiate a PDP? And so should the Council be allowed to invite experts and or interested parties to provide additional information and or answer questions on the issue? And should the Council be allowed to defer a vote if it feels there are still questions that need to be answered before it can make an informed decision on whether to initiate a PDP or not? And I think, you know, from the whole theme of flexibility, I think that's probably the answer to both those questions from this group are going to be yes, but I don't want to presuppose the answer. So does anybody want to speak on that? Margie, your hand's raised. I can't remember if that's still from the last one?
Yeah, that's the last one. Sorry, I'll take it down.
Well, that's okay. James, and then Marika.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I do agree that they should have this option.
Okay, Marika?
No, I was just wondering if there could be any more encouragement of having, I witness now often when an issue is presented, you know, staff presents a report, there might be a little bit of discussion, but I think many as well, because of the short deadlines, I don't really know how much time people have had to review the issues and, you know, above that, gone out themselves to talk to people or get opinions on what it is, what it is all about. So my question would it be of interest to actually, you know, for the council to invite, once they go and deliberate or have their meeting on reviewing the issues report, to say, well, are there any interested parties that have a stake in this issue that want to make their case? We, you know, because of course in the issues report, you know, staff present or aims to present information in a neutral way, but it might be of interest for the council to get as well the different views or you know, groups that have specific views on this to have the opportunity to state that, apart from maybe a public comment period that might take place beforehand. It's just a question of having a bit more debate, you know, at the point of taking that decision.
So you're talking about a time period for those proponents and opposition of this PDP to come at this stage to present to the council, if the council so chooses. You think this is the right stage as opposed to after the PDP?
I don't know. It's a question. It's more, you know, what I've witnessed so far is that it's, you know, normally when an issues report gets there, it's seldom that it doesn't go through, unless, you know, staff really strongly support, you know, more research or more discussion, and there's not often a whole lot of discussion at that stage. So I'm just wondering and maybe there's no need. Maybe indeed, as you said, that happens at a later stage in the process. But I'm wondering if you know, to engage a bit more and get some more information on the table, if that kind of process where you say, well, we put aside an hour or 2 hours to a specific issues report, you know, we have a presentation by staff on the issues report, then, you know, on some issues it's clear who are the stakeholders. They get invited to have a say as well, or, you know, if they don't agree with some of the conclusions in the issues report or something, to make their case as well. And then basically the council goes away and you know, takes a decision on whether to move forward or not, or, you know, whether more research is needed, or whether, you know, a pre-PDP should be more appropriate at this stage. But I mean, that those things might be just suggestions that could be included in any kind of, you know, manual or guidebook that might come out of this work as well, that it's some of the options the council could consider exploring. I mean, I don't think it's anything that you would like to mandate or, you know, require.
Okay. James, you have comments on this?
Yes, and I think, you know, providing access to experts to inform council deliberations can never be a bad thing. I just wanted to state that. But Marika raises a very interesting point, which is that the experts can inform, if we assume that there's flexibility in the timelines or flexibility in the scheduling or queuing based on how staff intensive or volunteer intensive the issue will be, the experts can the experts and the stakeholders can inform that process and perhaps even shed some light on just that an issue may be much more complex than it appears on the surface. And I wanted to pose a question without seeming like a complete neophyte here. I think I already know the answer, but I wanted to ask it anyway. Are issues reports subject to public comment before they're delivered to the council?
No, currently there's no requirement and no time to actually do it.
Okay.
Well, yeah,
so one idea might be to preempt or to formalize this process by having the issues reports, by opening them to some form of comment so that the experts and stakeholders can weigh in before, you know, and those comments then can be delivered to the council in addition to the issues report, because that might then prompt the council to ask some different questions or perhaps even reach out to some individual commenters to get to to build out some of their concerns or some of their ideas. But I'm thinking of this primarily in the terms of Fast Flux, the Fast Flux working group. If it seems like if we had some of this going on prior to the PDP being launched, it might have had a more productive PDP experience, because I think that folks would on the council would have seen immediately that this was not necessarily as cut and dry as it might have appeared initially, and that once we started to dive into this, it really was a can of worms. So I just wanted to put out the idea that Marika raised a really important point, and that perhaps subjecting the issues reports to some sort of a comment so the council can read those comments in conjunction with the issues reports and then possibly reach out to the individual stakeholders before having to vote on the adoption of a PDP, and then using all of that information to determine what the time frame should be.
Yeah, so going back to stage one, we actually have that, and you'll see it in the report that we talk about that, about members of the group suggested having a public comment period as optional prior to delivering it to the council. And I think it was optional because I think you had people on that call when we were talking about it, you had people like Alan Greenberg and Mike Rodebach who talked about it just delaying the process, because during the initiation phase there was supposed to be, there's birds of a feather and there's other things that are recommend, you know, best practices to get public input. So they're worried about it delaying. But we do talk about that as an option available to the council, or as an the best practice.
I do remember that now, Jeff. Thanks for having a better memory than I have. But I do remember that now, and I remember they were concerned about. There were some that were concerned about delaying the process. And I think that, you know, from my perspective, it's delaying to what? Delaying to getting something adopted just so it can be delayed in the working group? You know, I think, you know, we're racing to the next checkpoint just so it can get stuck in the mud there instead of on the table at the council meeting. That's not really a delay if you can spend and invest a little bit more time on the front end and, you know, cut months off the working group's activities. I think that's not really a delay. So I'll just stop talking now, but that's how I, you know, in that particular case, certainly how I would have seen that play out.
Well, right. I think your point is that, look, if there is a public comment period before delivery of the issues report to the council, then that could lessen the need to have the GNSO have some sort of input or presentation or expert advice at this later stage.
Right, and I think that we can't measure time frames or delays versus what the next stage or gate in the process will be. You know, if we look at it holistically, you know, speeding up one phase or eliminating all the barriers and checks for one phase just so that it can kind of get through to the next stage is not really the perspective that we should be looking at, I think. So that's just...
Well, I think that's good, and I think that also gets us to the next question, which is right now in the bylaws, it's interesting, and I've always kind of found this a little bit weird, is that right after you initiate a PDP, then an immediate public comment period starts, even before, or I guess it's contemporaneously with the setting up of a working group or task force, is that there's this public comment period.
Jeff, if I can just... you know, comment on that one. I mean, we I think from a staff perspective, we have interpreted that one a bit more flexible, I think, as it's written there. I mean, we normally use it once a working group is launched. We do it then and basically say, well, this is to announce the initiation of the PDP and request already input, you know, before the working group really goes into the deliberations for members of the community to come forward with information they think might be useful for the working group to consider. So, but I agree, as it's written there, I think it really is just announcing the initiation, and that's it. It doesn't, you know, we've used it more broadly because we think there's value in, you know, people providing information at the start of a working group process, but as it's written, it's more limited than that.
Okay, so the question is, though, is that still relevant, or should the working group have the option to determine when a public comment period, when there is a public comment period? In other words, should we even mandate this after the after the charter's approved and even after the working groups, should this be mandated in the bylaws?
I mean, Jeff, this is Maria, this is a question for you, as you were involved when the bylaws were drafted. Was this put in there out of concern that otherwise, you know, the GNSO Council wouldn't tell anyone that a PDP had started and, you know, just do things, you know, within closed doors and then come up suddenly with the result and that the world would go, oh, we didn't even know that this was going on. Was that a reason why this was put in, or do you recall?
Well, from what I recall, it was basically, it was not so much that, but it was to make sure that when the working groups or the task force or whoever started, everyone knew each other's positions. So everyone knew where the business constituency was coming from, where the registrars were coming from, because really it's really for the constituencies for the comment period, mostly. I mean, it does say public comment period. It was mostly for the constituencies to develop statements.
Okay, because I don't think that has been the practice, no?
No, it certainly hasn't been the practice, but...
Okay.
But it's almost like you've gotten... I don't know. It's just seemed to... That's one of those that we didn't really focus on that was kind of just taken from the PDP that was before it. Is this a good idea to start an immediate public comment period even after the working group is, or should we just leave that for the working group work team to talk about and just say that we don't think at this point it should be mandated by the bylaws that you immediately start a public comment period, that it should be up to the working group to determine, but that there needs to be public comment considered in the working group's deliverables? So I see James, you have a comment on that one?
Yeah, yeah, just real quickly, Jeff, I'd like to point out that, you know, by having a public comment either before or shortly after a working group convenes might take away from participation in the working group itself. If folks think that, you know, well, I see this issue, I'll just submit a comment and be done with it, where I think that, you know, we want to make sure that folks understand that if they have a stake in a PDP, they should join the working group.
And it should be a time for constituency members, if they join, to get their thoughts from their, or should say stakeholder groups or constituencies.
Can I add something, Jeff?
Yep, sure.
Because I think I slightly disagree, because what I've seen, at least in practice, those people submitting comments at that stage, it's normally not, you know, I don't think they would otherwise join the working group, or I think otherwise if they provide valid information, it's a way as well to reach out to those individuals and say, hey, instead of just putting in your comment, you might consider joining the working group. I think there is value, you know, maybe not on announcing the initiation of a PDP, but having a public comment period at the beginning for the working group to have some input in that. So, you know, give the working group one or two or three meetings to formulate which questions they might want to ask to the public, because in some of the PDPs we're working on now, there's really the question, so, you know, is this really a problem? What kind of evidence is out there? Can we really ask for people to provide some examples of things they would like to see addressed, or they think the information that is needed for the working group to really take a good decision? And the problem is if that information is only provided at the initial report, you know, often the group has already set out its positions and it's more difficult to really bring that back into the deliberation. So I do see some value in providing the opportunity for the community to put out information or submit you know, statements that they think might help inform the deliberations of the working group going forward.
So maybe it's a recommendation to the working group. What you're saying is that it's almost a recommendation to the working group to initiate a public comment period by shaping the specific questions that they need answered or the topics that they want addressed, as opposed to just throwing out a general, okay, we've initiated a PDP, here's the, on this subject, here's the charter, give us some comments, which is pretty open-ended. So should it be a deliverable of a working group, an early deliverable, as opposed to a council-mandated comment period?
Jeff, this is James. I think it could be both, but you know, if there's merit into the idea of submitting issues reports for comment, and that's an option, and the issues report goes to comment, and then the issues report and the comments are delivered to council, which adopts them, and then immediately turns around and puts the charter out for comment, I think that's just I just think that's unnecessarily redundant.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, James, on that one. As far as, but then again, a working group meeting a couple times, figuring out, okay, now we're talking about solutions, right? Because the issues report is talking about the appropriate questions and issues as opposed to the solutioning. If the working group gets together and says, okay, let's narrow this down, or let's figure out the types of solutions that are out there and then seek comments on those before we develop a preliminary report, maybe that's better use of public comment. Marika, you have thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, I think I agree. I mean, if there's this public comment period following the issues report, I guess that's the opportunity as well for members of the community to provide information that they think needs to be included. And I mean, working groups have the flexibility now as well that if they want to, you know, have another public comment period or ask a specific question, they can do that. So I agree. I think as it is currently written, you know, it doesn't make much sense. So I think it would be good to provide a suggestion to working groups and make sure that they know that they have that option and have, you know, the input covered in the earlier public comment period following the issues report. I think that makes sense.
And Jeff, maybe the idea is they have the option to have the issues report commented upon. They had the option of having the working group's first order of business being to solicit comments, but maybe we remove the option that they can do both.
Okay, so let's reflect that in our in the notes here to do that. The last is 10, the last one here. Yep. Okay. So I think we actually talked about this issue. So I'm not sure what I'm trying to remember why it's in this stage two, which is clarifying in scope. And I think we talked about this in previous discussions about really in scope means in scope for the GNSO, but perhaps there's notations in the issues report, if possible, as to whether we may be talking about something that's outside the picket fence, so may not be in scope of a consensus policy. Right? Isn't that where we ended up?
Yeah, I think it's just mentioned here because it specifically is included in language related to the initiation of the PDP.
Right. So
it's more to be consistent and make sure that we don't forget as well to change the language there in the same way as we discussed in the previous stage.
Right. Okay. Is there any other questions on that one? All right. We did not get to the emergency urgency ones, but I think we talked about prioritizing, and I think so we did kind of address it. I'm not sure at this point, since we're scheduled to end at 11:30, that we, or in 5 minutes, that we have enough time to start that one. So I just want to go over the schedule and deliverables and some things on timing. My thought is, and I'll put a note out to the list, that, so we're getting close to Seoul, and it'd be nice to have some things delivered by that point in time. And so I want to throw this out there about having in September the biweekly calls, which would be the 10th and the 24th, and then starting that following week is doing weekly calls up until Seoul. So that would mean the 1st, 8th, and 15th of October. So I just want to kind of throw that out. Any thoughts on that? Is that overkill? I'm just getting, you know, I'd like to have some good progress before Seoul, but I don't want to start weekly calls immediately because that would really be overkill.
Jeff, it's Paul. I think that's fine, and you can sort of play it by ear as you get closer to October. If we're making good progress, you might not even need the extra meeting, but put it out there to, you know, put people's feet to the fire. I mean, you've had a consistent group of attendees, but obviously the people signed up to the working group's much larger, and hopefully more will try and dial in on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think giving a month's notice before we do that is hopefully enough time for people to kind of put it on their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't we'll send around a note that basically talks about the next, you know, five calls, and maybe someone from ICANN staff could actually send that note around to the team saying, you know, here's the schedule of future calls, and it'll all be at the same time.
Gisela, could you take care of that? I'll take care of it. I'll make sure that someone takes care of it.
Okay. So as a reminder, hopefully by tomorrow, the end of tomorrow, close of business, we'll send around a draft. Remember, it's only a rough first draft of a report on the stage one. Then we're going to put together a survey for stage two and hopefully have that out within the next 10 days, I'm hoping, or in 10 days. To cover these topics and maybe give a two-week time period to answer those questions. And then we will hopefully have a draft rough report in early October on stage two that considers the survey results and the what we've talked about now. And then in the meantime, for the next call, we'll talk about the draft of stage one and then for maybe half the call, and then go to a stage three, which hopefully ICANN staff can put it in a chart like this by the next call. That sound doable, Marika? Okay. Any questions on timing? Okay, anybody else have any other issues before we hang up?
That's just Gisela to say that I did get your comment, Jeff. Sorry, I was on mute and it takes ages to unmute. I'll send out a note with the next dates and timings.
Great. For the all the and then oh I'm sorry, the last topic is that you just reminded me of is in Seoul. Can we also ask in that note who's going to be there and when they plan on getting there? Because I think the goal is to have both a PPSC meeting and a work team meeting in Seoul on that Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure what the ICANN schedule is.
As I recall, I think it's more likely on Sunday, because I think Saturday is reserved for a lot of updates, I think, on new GTLDs and IDNs and stuff. So I think it will be similar to Sydney, where there will be time on Sunday. But I'll look into that and confirm.
Great. So we'll do that. And just to make sure that everyone, or it would be nice to know who from the work team is planning on being there. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.
Thank you, Louise. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.